Hi, and welcome to the QuitCast for Writers. This is the show that helps you know what to quit, what to keep, and what to question. My name is Becca Syme, and I am a success coach for authors with thousands of hours in coaching some of the most successful people in this industry. My goal in this podcast is to help you understand why you're not having success if you aren't, and how to double down on the success you're already having. Anyone can tell you what worked for them, and they can say it might not work for you, but they can't tell you why. I can tell you why. Welcome to the QuitCast. I'm going to prepare you. Today's QuitCast episode is not going to be fun, and I may get some actual pushback on this, and I'm prepared for it, but it's time to talk about this. We've been doing the sustainability series for a couple of weeks, and this is the topic that I keep not wanting to talk about. So we're going to talk about it. And I'm going to be as honest as I can from the perspective of someone who's coached 5,700 plus individual authors, some of the literal most successful people in the industry, and also everyone in the middle, right? So all of the six-figure, high five-figure, mid five-figure, low five-figure, four-figure, three-figure, two-figure, one-figure, right? Like a zero-figure. Everyone at some point, we've coached a high number, or I have individually, and also my coaches have coached a high number of people in each one of those categories. So when I talk about this today, I'm talking not just from my own personal experience or what I think, but I'm talking about the patterns that I see in the larger industry from having coached a statistically relevant and significant number of authors. So here's the topic for today. What you should stop doing right now. I feel like I'm always the person who's saying, don't do this, don't do that. And I come across as being very like the quit coach, right? The quit books. I wrote Dear Writer, You Need to Quit. And everyone thinks I'm trying to get writers to quit writing. That's not at all what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to bring sanity to people who feel insane. And so hopefully this will help today. Okay. I keep saying we're going to talk about the organizational growth curve, and we are going to talk about that today, but there's a specific reason why we're going to talk about it. And if you've been around here for any length of time, you know that my beginning of my podcast intro used to say, anyone can tell you what worked for them, and they can say it might not work for you, but they can't tell you why. I can tell you why. And the reason I could do that is because the statistically significant number, right? That's one part, but also because I'm looking for the larger patterns and I have no agenda because I'm a writer. So I originally started doing all of this work because I was curious and wanted to know why certain things were happening, why this thing would happen to one friend and that thing would happen to another, why this thing would happen to me and not to other people and vice versa. So my study of all this in the industry, the big picture stuff, the mindset stuff, was all originally because I'm a writer and I want to know more about my industry because I want to succeed. And I'm assuming that everyone who's here watching this is similarly also a writer and wanting to succeed. So here is the reason we need to talk about the organizational growth curve. So when I first got into graduate school, one of the things we were trying to do was study, and this was from a nonprofit angle specifically, but our profs were like, it applies everywhere. It doesn't matter. The principle is the same. We studied what organizational growth looks like. And if you've ever heard of industrial and organizational psychology, this is basically the purpose of this branch of psychology, is to try to understand why and how organizations function the way they do, how to make them healthier, how to make them more successful, and then how to apply certain principles of either growth or success or whatever it is, or sometimes, right, conflict management, turnaround, stuff like that. So anyway, IO is what it's called, industrial organizational psychology. And there's this principle in organizational development, and it's also an economics principle. It applies in so, it's a philosophical principle. It applies in so many different arenas. But where I specifically learned it was when we were just trying to discover how organizations would healthily grow and how to prevent both stagnation, which would eventually lead to organizational death, and also how to prevent the overspending of resources that would eventually kill organizations. So remember, we're trying to talk about what it is that we need to stop doing, like why this particular thing we're doing, we need to stop it. And it is urgently needed that we stop doing this for our own health and safety, for our own sustainability long-term, if we want to have a sustainable author career, because organizations, companies, individual entrepreneurships all grow at the same, with the same principles surrounding them. So the basic concept of the organizational growth curve is necessary to understand this. So let's talk about it. So if you imagine that you have a certain amount of resources in order to start a business or an organization, or the organization itself has a certain amount of resources, and the way that you spend the resources has to be in some kind of proportion to the way that more resources come in. Otherwise, you are going to spend all the resources out and you're not going to be able to grow. So organizational growth basically happens, and if you're watching it on like an XY axis, it happens that you spend money or you spend resources in order to create something, make a product, invest in a product, invest in a business. And it basically looks like it takes a dip for a while, right? It's a similar concept to The Dip by Seth Godin, but what happens at the end is different. But it's a similar concept where there is a spending of resources of some kind in order to make the product happen. And then what you want to see is you want to see a return where the growth happens, the product is received, it's purchased, everyone is happy with it. And then as the growth happens and it starts to get more vertical, then it starts to get heavy. And that vertical growth then is going to collapse on itself if you don't build infrastructure underneath it in order to support that growth. So basically it is take a dip, have growth, grow at such a rate that it starts to get, you can't sustain it in that same direction. It's going to topple. And so we build underneath it. And then what happens is the growth slows down because you have to expend resources in order to create more. And then it grows again. And then you have to create more organization underneath of it. It's how we get middle management. It's how we get corporate structure, et cetera. But it's also economically is how companies become sustainable. And actually the whole concept of scalability and sustainability is basically this XY axis where if you do not have the capacity to create organization underneath of the growth by scaling usually, so either by the creation of the product or by bringing in more people who can make the product, then you can continue to grow. And then at some point you will top out, either you won't be able to build any more underneath of it, or you'll run out of your capacity to continue to bring in new customers. But then you can still maintain, but that's a different conversation, right? The way this looks with writers, if you take it in terms of one individual book, and you assume that our production process of how we put time and effort into books is the resource, because nothing is free. Everything costs something. So your time and energy is a cost to you, and it's a cost to your author business. And when you invest time and energy into something, then you want to see the growth happen, but not all products are created equal, right? So this is why, for instance, 3/4 of restaurants fail, right? Is because there isn't either enough interest or the product isn't made sustainably. Like there are all these reasons why organizations crumble, where they either invest a lot, like they invest too much and they can't ever get enough growth to push the organizational profits up, or they invest in something that won't ever return and they basically stay at that low level for forever, or they invest and it goes so well that they end up toppling on themselves and not being able to produce because they can't ever replicate and sustain that growth. And when it continues to go up, gravity still happens. And I think this is the core concept of organizational growth, is that you build infrastructure to support growth. You don't have growth because you build infrastructure. And this is why I had to explain at least the core concept of the growth curve before we talked about this thing that I need for authors to stop doing. Lean in and listen to me. You have to stop creating infrastructure around products that aren't selling. You have to stop. If you build it, they will come is fantasy. It's fiction. Okay. I'm trying really hard not to be too pointed about this because there are some of you who need to ignore what I'm saying. And if you are that person, you'll know it because you'll feel like you're just on the edge of something and you'll be like, this isn't for me. And you can shut it off now. Good luck and welcome. And there'll be another video for you at some point in the future. But some of us need to hear this on such a deep cellular level, and we are avoiding hearing it from anywhere else because what is being told to us by every other place is if you build it, they will come. If you treat it like a business, it will become a business. If you follow these 10 steps, then you will become a successful author. And I know I throw statistics around a lot, and I know that it frustrates some of us because statistics aren't predictive, they're descriptive, right? So we can't promise that, for instance, the 98.2% or whatever it was, I always forget to get the numbers mixed up with body temperature for some reason. Anyway, but the 98%+ of writers who are not currently making, yes, they are descriptive, but who are not currently making more than $1,000 on a book in a year, has not changed a lot. Like it has fluxed a little bit, right? Like it's gone up and down. You'll see more books performing better into the 150,000 or 200,000 rank on Kindle or something like that, right? But generally speaking, we're not seeing books that are ranked at 500 and 400,000 that are making a lot of money. So we still know, even if it's as low as 95% of books aren't selling, that still is a very high percentage. And some of us have a lot of books that are in that 95% that only really go up into the top when we do something like get a BookBub or run a promo. They're not getting up there by our advertising and promotion, by our discovery work. They're not staying up there, which is the more important part. And some of us really, really need to hear that if a product is going to be sustainable, it should be able to sustain itself when you draw attention to it. That does not mean that the product is bad. So what I've been saying a lot recently in on podcasts and in conferences is the market's always right. And we don't like to hear this because as authors, we have certain things that we want to believe are true about the market, like only good books sell, our definition of good, only good books sell, stuff like that. But the reality is that the market speaks when books sell and don't sell. And it isn't always about whether the book is good or not. And some of you have found an undiscovered gem before that is not selling for some reason, or it doesn't have a lot of reviews for some reason, but you love it and you think it's great. And you're like, oh, but in that particular case, the market was wrong. And I'm like, but was it? Because if it has been seen widely and it is not selling, then the market is saying, yeah, we don't need this right now. What it isn't saying, and this is important, what it's not saying is this is crap. take it away and never show it to me again. All it's saying is not right now, not right now, not right now, not right now. But it is important to know that when the market is not responding, some of us are doing everything we can to build infrastructure around a particular book or series or something, and the market keeps saying no, and we are not listening to the market. And this is why I said, I think some of you are going to be frustrated by this, and some of us are not going to be happy hearing it. And I apologize for that, because I don't want to hurt anybody and I don't want to make anyone crush their dreams. But my hope is that if your books have not sold in the past, that the goal would be to scale back the way that you're building infrastructure. Some of us are making newsletters and running ads and doing all of these things and running Kickstarters and doing TikTok and doing a million things trying to make the book sell, when our good faith efforts to make them sell have not worked and we try absolutely everything we can try and they're still not selling and we wonder why they're not selling. And the answer is the market is always right in the moment. The market is not, does not want that book right now. And the reason I backpedal so fast and I'm like, it doesn't mean it's bad, is because I know some of you will be like, well, but good books sell and bad books don't sell. So if my book isn't selling, that means that it's bad. And I don't think it's bad, it's good. So it should be selling. That's not what I'm saying. The reasons why books sell, the book being good is only one reason out of a million why books sell. And it's such a complex and difficult to explain set of factors, because it literally can be affected by everything from what time of year it is, to what else is in the news right now, to what's going on in the world, to, I mean, so many millions of things can affect the reasons why books sell and don't sell. And there is no one single factor that's going to make books sell. And of course, everybody has the like, oh, but this book was so crappy. And I'm like, right, but a million people are reading it and they're not stupid. Even if you think they're stupid, they're not stupid. When readers like something, they're not being tricked into liking it. They're not being sold some whatever into like, they actually like it. Readers will not continue to read something they don't like. There's too much out there for them to potentially be able to read, for them to just be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to buy this thing that I think is really stupid because everybody's buying it. And then I'm going to talk about how much I love it and tell everybody about it. That doesn't happen. It is absolutely possible for me to not like a book that everyone else likes. That happens all the time. But what is not happening is readers are not liking stuff against their will. They are not liking things that they don't really like. The market is correct. And it has very little to do with good and bad or right and wrong. In fact, I would argue in capitalism, like in the free market economy, is never about good and bad or right and wrong. If it was, everything would be different. But the market is capricious. Loki is in charge of the market, not Captain America. If Captain America was in charge of the market, it would make total sense. Everything would be very logical. For all of you achiever responsibility people, hard work would equal outcome every single time. But do we see that happen in the book publishing market? No, we don't. The market is capricious. It's run by a chaos god who is the collection of every single person, 7.5 billion people's individual preferences. It is not predictable. It is not moral. And it is not ethical. And it is not, yeah, I don't know how else to say this. Loki's in charge. None of it makes sense. But we want it to make sense and we want it to be logical and predictable. And we want to say, if you do X, then Y will happen. We want that really bad. And I think a lot of us buy into that thinking, believing that if I just do X, then Y is going to happen. And when Y doesn't happen, we look at ourselves to figure out what's wrong instead of looking at the market and saying, okay, the market is capricious. Maybe I'm not going to spend a ton of money building a bunch of infrastructure, underneath a platform that has not yet told me, oh yeah, it's going to be able to support this. Yeah, this is a growth that will support this kind of expectation. And yes, there are all kinds of nuances to this. I feel like I'm going to hang out on this topic for a while. And I apologize for any of you who are here for other things, but this is what's coming. There's a reckoning coming for some of us, and it's been coming for some of us. And I have walked through it with some of you where it is, I have been doing this. I was promised if I did this, this would happen. And it's not happening. Why is it not happening, Becca? Make it make sense. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense though. Like the market is capricious. I've read people's books who have come to me for coaching and they're like, why is this book not selling? And I read it and I'm like, I don't know, this is a great book. And then they tell me like, well, I've changed covers. I've done this. I've done that. You know, we might look at the beginning and see, is it hooky enough? Does it force people to turn the page, et cetera? But there is no reason. It doesn't make sense. Sometimes it does make sense. And I can do this even with my own platform. I can look backwards at the books that I've written that haven't sold, and it makes total sense why they haven't sold. Like I can actually outline for you in my backlist the series that did well and the series that didn't, or the series that didn't, because they really did crappily. I can outline for you why all of that happened and tell you exactly what I did wrong. Can I fix that in the future is the question. And we're going to get to that in a second. But I need for us to spend some time here because there is some QTPing that needs to happen on such a massive level with some of us on this particular topic because we are not willing to believe that it is not in fact our fault, that we did not in fact do something wrong, that we are not in fact awful writers and bad business people, and that it isn't just that. The market is capricious and organizational growth happens the way it happens. And some of us are running ads and doing newsletters and spending all day on social media and our books aren't selling and we are confused because we're doing it all right, but we are not taking into account the organizational growth curve and why it's important that that curve exists. It is not something somebody made up. It's something we see happen every time a business grows or doesn't grow. When a business or company or organization does not follow the growth curve because it's not responding to, or the market is not responding to it, it will die. The only exceptions to these rules are organizations that are funded by something other than product sales. So other than clients coming in or selling products or selling services or whatever. One example of this is the post office. Because the post office is an essential service, it is partly paid for by our tax dollars in the United States. And then partly paid for in the excess of what is an expected essential service. So me receiving my mail on time and, you know, safely and securely is a right that I hold as an American citizen. And then I pay taxes to protect that right. And so when someone else wants to send a letter or they want to mail a big package or whatever, then they have to pay for that, but they are not paying what it actually costs to make that happen because the organization itself is funded by tax dollars. So the only reason I bring that up, because I know the post office is controversial in this country, which, what isn't controversial in this country? But I know the post office is not an example of organizational growth curves, particularly because there is another source of income that is funding this growth. So the product itself doesn't have to pay for the entire organization and all of the support necessary to make the organization happen. So if you have an outside source of funding, if you have a spouse, partner, parent, patron who is funding your creative endeavors, then you do not have to have a product that pays for itself, because you can continue to use that funding in order to make the system go. If you do not have that and the product does have to pay for itself, then the product itself is eventually going to limit what you're able to do. And that will be something you will learn whether you want to or not, just because it's that is That is like the law of gravity, right? In this, in the economy, in any economy. But the difference is, if you build infrastructure to support a product that is not paying for itself, you are eventually going to have to find other means of income to pay for that infrastructure. And what I want to see us do is just to align ourselves with this truth. I don't have to build infrastructure. I don't have to spend a lot of time and money if I have a product that the market is not responding to. Because beyond a certain point, so beyond a reasonable expectation of my getting my product into the hands of consumers, beyond that reasonable expectation, if people aren't responding by continuing to fund my platform, then I'm going to run out of resources eventually. I'll either run out of my own time and money, or I will stop being able to produce new products that continue to feed the organizational growth curve over and over again and continue to grow my business because I'm spending so much time building infrastructure that isn't paying for itself. And again, I know this is not fun to talk about. And I know 90% of us are going to feel some kind of pain about this. And I can preemptively feel the emotions on the other side. I wish that we didn't have to talk about this because I wish Captain America was in charge of the, or whoever is your, you know, icon of truth and justice was in charge of the publishing industry, but they're not. They're not. And if we continue to build infrastructure and spend all of our time and money assuming that the product should sell, and then when the market tells us it won't, we continue to try to build more infrastructure and throw more money at the problem instead of taking a good step back and looking at whether or not we are able to make a product right now that the market will buy. And by the way, because I know some of you are going to be thinking this, some of you are going to be thinking, I guess I should just quit then. Because I've never been able to make a product in the past that the market wants. That's not an indicator. There are plenty of people who have never written a book before that would sell because of how they've been creating those books in the past. But in the future, they're able to, because when they align themselves with what's really the good writer inside of them, and I don't mean that their past books haven't been good. I mean, they haven't been. The market hasn't responded to them. Anyway, what I don't mean is that you can't sell in the future because you haven't sold in the past. That's not an indicator. In fact, every time I hear someone talk about a takeoff story, like when they took off in their success as an author, and I hear this particular pattern of like, it didn't work and it didn't work and it didn't work and it didn't work. And I'm like, right. But then when it does work, all of the success seeds are in those early times, right? Where while I wrote this book because someone told me this was trending and telling. And so I went off and did that. And then I wrote this book because somebody said, this is really popular on TikTok. So I went off and wrote that series and that didn't sell. And then I saw this workshop and somebody said, hey, this is the new big thing. So I'm going to go off and do that. And then when I finally got sick and tired of listening to other people tell me what to write, I wrote whatever the hell I wanted to write. And then that took off. And again, not saying that's 100% of the time the answer, because of course there are some people who went the opposite direction. They wrote whatever they wanted. It didn't sell. It didn't sell. It didn't sell. It didn't sell. And finally they decided to write to market and then it sold. The problem with this industry is that there is no one path for every person. There is no industry standard of what works for everyone. And there is no predictable success path. It just doesn't happen. It's one of the reasons that our author success archetype work has been so painful is that it's so nuanced. There are so many of them. It's not like there's just four types of writers. There's hundreds of types of writers, and it's hard to know what your success path is. So we're here at the BFA and at the QuitCast always trying to help you figure out what that is, because we're all writers, because we all want to have an experience in an industry that's sane and safe. and the industry feels very insane right now, and it is not going to get better. And this reckoning is going to come at some point, and it's going to come in waves, because like the organizational growth curve, if you don't grow, eventually your plateau or your flatness is either going to stop you from participating, or you're going to have to change the way that you participate. And because we already see that happening, and we've seen it in the past, and we know that it happens and know that it's coming for some of us, it's something we're used to, I think, is the speculative industries by nature have a high turnover. And I just want to see the people who really have the desire and the capacity and the heart to write, be able to write at whatever level they are able to write and continue to do this thing that they love doing. And I know that the hard truth is that not all of us are going to be able to do this at the level we want to do it at. And that's why I don't like having this conversation, right? It's because I know just from experience, like from experience coaching, I know that that level of success is not attainable for all of us. There are definitely different levels of success, right? Like not everyone is going to be successful at this level, but could potentially be successful at this level or this level. But that also takes a reckoning sometimes of what am I willing to give up in order to get to a place, and what's possible for me and what's not possible for me, and et cetera, et cetera. And I really need to stop going in that direction, because that will be for another time. The core thing that I wanted to talk about today, and the reason that I am doing this from my kitchen instead of my podcast studio, which is not set up yet the way that I've wanted to be, is because I have had so many coaching calls with people in the last month, and it feels like it's increasing to kind of a fever pitch of people who need to hear this particular message about how to readjust expectations. And so now let's get into the, okay, so what do we do about this part? Because this is going to have a few different potential paths away from this. As I said earlier, some of us are going to hear me say this and say, yeah, this isn't for me. And they're probably have already stopped watching. And if they haven't by now, they probably will stop now. And that's okay, because not every video is for everybody. So that's one potential path, is ignore what I'm saying completely. It is coming for you, whether you want it to or not, because like essential pain, that table is there in the middle of the room, and we are going to hit it with our foot when we walk by it, whether we want to or not, because we keep trying to walk in the path where the table is. So essential pain, again, regardless of whether you want it to or not, at some point, this realization will come for you. And so it's good that that happens. But that realization of I'm not doing a sustainable thing does not mean I have to quit. It does not mean I have to quit trying to be a business. It doesn't mean I have to quit trying new things. It doesn't mean I have to quit that TikTok campaign or that Kickstarter thing I was doing. It does not mean that I have to quit. What it means is I need perspective on the decisions that I'm making that is not guided by the expectation that building infrastructure creates growth. That's really the core of this video. I have got to stop expecting that if I build it, they will come. That somehow there's this expectation that we're all in a baseball movie individually, but at the same time together, and that there is a massively infinite number of readers, even though there is a lot, there are a lot of readers, but there is not a sustainable amount of readers in the marketplace to be able to support every single person having the career that they want. And so what that means is not you as an individual can't have the career you want. That's not what it means. What it means is if your path is telling you that you can't have the career that you want, then we want to readjust the expectations so that we can see, but is there still something I can have that will make me happy? Like, can I still have this, you know, whatever it is, right? Can I still release the books that I want to release? Can I still have a fan base? Can I still you know, write part-time and have a part-time job? Like, is that possible? Even if I can't hit this big thing or haven't hit it yet. But this is primarily about, again, questioning whether I am building infrastructure, expecting that it will make the book sell, or if I'm building infrastructure and making decisions because there is actually a product that the readers want. So if you are in the paths of people who have not ignored me yet, have not turned this off, are not having the success that you want and are frustrated by the fact that you're doing a lot and not making money back, here's what I want you to consider. And there's, let's say, three primary things I want you to consider. The first is, look at all the things that you're doing. If you can't tell whether or not something is making a difference, it's not making a difference. An awful lot of us need to stop doing marketing things, discovery things, advertising things, whatever, that are not having an impact on our business, because we can't tell the discernible difference that they're making, but we're spending all of this time. And again, spending is the important word. So the first thing I want you to consider is do some kind of an assessment on all of the different things that you're doing and what kind of return you're seeing from them. And winnow is the number two. As much as possible, quit doing things that are infrastructure supporting primarily, where you are spending resources to bring people in or to try to gather people that are not bearing fruit for you. Like, I want you to, no matter what everybody says you should be doing, and so much of this is about quitting the stuff that we already know we should be quitting intuitively anyway, and we just need to listen to our intuition. You have to at least experiment with quitting, because if you have a product that the readers really want, you will know it. They will buy it. They will come for you, right? Like, they will find you when they find you. If you get discovered, if you have a BookBub, if you, you know, go on TikTok, and the readers are responding, you will know that they've responded. They will purchase, they will talk, they will review, and that's important. So I want you to winnow as much as possible, specifically because a lot of us are doing the things that we're told because we've been told that the things will produce the results. And so just question the premise. And again, if you can tell it's making a difference, you need to keep doing it, or you need to pay somebody else to do it for sustainability purposes. And we've talked about that in past. The third, and this is going to be This is the piece that I dread talking about the most, specifically because it is such a nebulous thing to do. So those of you who've been around this industry for a long time, remember back before indie publishing, I went to my first writer's conference. I mean, my first like official big writer's conference in 2009. And I remember sitting in a panel with the top agents and editors at the time. Right. And the room was full. Everybody was asking questions. And they got this question about three or four times about what is selling right now. And they kept kind of giving a vague answer. And I can't remember who did this, because I wish that I did so I could tell you, like, this was a formative experience of my life. But I didn't know the industry well enough at the time to know the names of who it was. But this woman stood up and she was like, look, all of you want us to tell you what you should write, and we can't tell you what you should write. We don't know what you should write as an individual. We can tell you what the trends are. We can tell you what we're seeing. We can tell you what we're buying right now. But ultimately, all of you could go write the book that I tell you to write, and you could still not get a contract. And I just sat there and I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Because every time I'd heard someone say, what should I write? And the agents, editors, you know, on other panels and this one would just be like, all I can say is write me a great book, write me a great book, write me a great book. And I could hear the people around me getting frustrated with that, because they're like, well, that doesn't tell me what to do. And when she finally stood up and kind of said this, like, look, you guys, I get that you all want to sell. This was the basic message, right? Like, I get that you all want to sell, but I can't tell you how to do that. And what Becca would say in 2022, gosh, that was a long time ago. But what Becca would say is, I can't predict what will happen for you, because that is an individual success path. But what I can tell you is that if you focus more on writing that great book that is from your insides, or if you're not a right from the heart person, that is exactly to, you know, the structure and exactly to because that would light you up, right? To get it correct, to get it right. If you write a book that lights you up, it is more likely to be the book that we want, you know, speaking from the agent's perspective, than it is if I tell you, hey, go write vampire romance, right? Because that's what's really hot right now. Because I don't know, frankly, what's hot right now. I try as much as I can to not talk about that because it's so dated. But at the time, you know, everybody was like, ooh, isn't this cool? And even then, you know, when all the rest of us were reading everything, everybody from the podium was still like, yeah, don't send me that because it's played out, where, you know, I could have read it for forever. But anyway, that's beside the point. So what no one can do is tell you, and I mean, no one could tell you, if you write this, it will sell. If you write this, it will sell. If you do this, you will sell. If this happens, it will sell. Because I've seen every single iteration of it all makes sense that I should have been able to do this and then I didn't. I can't tell you how many hundreds of times I've heard that from people who were poised to take off, from people who are doing the right things at the right time, from people, quote unquote, the right time, from people who have written great books, from people who, whatever it is, right? From talented writers, people who know they're good writers, who still can't make this work, right? For yet or right now, for whatever reason. It is extremely hard when there is no specific concrete answer other than write me a good book. And now that we've come all the way full circle back to, okay, the industry is more established now. We've been through the destabilization of the publishing industry. It is now a more established industry. And now we are more than ever in the place where you're just going to have to write me a good book is the advice. And so the third path, and this is the pain point, is that some of us need to write better books. And I don't mean better by our standards, or better by the standard of my MFA professors, or better by the standard of the literary critics. I mean better by the market standards. And I don't mean right to market. I mean, there's something that we're doing that's not hitting, or there's something that we are writing that is not in us, or not the way we should be doing it. And we need to realign ourselves and do this in a more sustainable way and stop building infrastructure for products that aren't selling. And again, this is so painful because this is all wrapped up in the dreams that we all have of being a writer. So I just have to say one last time, I am not telling you that because you haven't taken off yet, you will never take off, or you will never sell, or your dreams are crashed or irrelevant. I'm not telling you that you should quit writing, but I know some of us will. I know some of us will quit in the next 2 years, in the next 3 years, in the next 5 years, or some of us will quit trying to build an author business. Because our pocketbook will show us this is not sustainable for you to continue doing in this way. But here's the good news, because on that third path of working on the book, and some of you need to do the first two as well, the assessment and the winnowing, like some of you need to do both of those. But the third path of I need to do some R&D, some research and development. I need to try writing books that light me up. I need to try writing the thing that only I can write, the thing that is in me to write. Or I need to try writing to market in a different way than I have. And one of the videos that's coming up in this particular series is going to be how to write the market without writing to market, because some of us can't write to market, and I want to address that. But some of us need to change the way that we think about how we write books for a particular market. Some of us need to, like the seven-figure fiction or like Jennifer Lynn Barnes talk about, write more butter or write our id lists. We need to write more of what is in us, what we want, what makes our fiction tasty. We need to head more in those directions rather than trying to think about how I follow a path to get to this place, right? Like that there's some kind of laid out step one through step five that's going to just make me be able to reproduce everything. And then some of us, and this is a smaller path of people, but some of us actually also need to just keep doing what we're doing, because we're having what we would consider to be, but what probably Becca would consider to be not, what we consider a moderate amount of success, or not the success that we want, but we're having some success. And we're feeling pressure to write faster and write more. And instead, Becca's like, nope, you need to do this in a sustainable way. Because if you use your resources too quickly, then we're looking at the organizational growth curve. If you use your resources too quickly without building some sustainability into that, then you will eventually topple on yourself. And we don't want that to happen. So there is a small segment of people who need to just keep doing what we're doing in not quite rinse, lather, repeat way, but kind of rinse, lather, repeat. And then some of us need to quit. I hate saying that, because when I originally wrote the first quit book, my goal was never, ever to encourage people to quit writing. But what I have seen in the last 7 years, 8 years, breaks my heart sometimes. Like people feeling like failures, and people seeing their dreams crushed, and people taking the wrong path and believing the wrong things and trusting the wrong people and, you know, going in the wrong direction, and then feeling like their life has just completely been ruined by this experience. It's hard. It's hard to sit with people when they feel that way. And it's hard to know that this industry is chewing up and spitting out some people, and they're not going to be able to continue. But what I would rather see for those of us who are on that path is I would rather see us do something to release the tension so that we can keep the writing. Some of us do need to quit, like legitimately need to just quit. Quit. And if that's you and you really feel that intuitively from inside your heart, then maybe you need to consider that. But generally speaking, what I would like to see us do is just take the pressure off. Stop building infrastructure around products that the market is not responding to. Start writing something that will light you up. Get back to the joy of writing. Take a break if you have to, if that is what feels intuitively right for you. You know, or if you are at the end of this whole thing and you just don't know what to do, come to our live coaching. We do a big live coaching on our Crowdcast. I'll put the link in the show notes so that you can sign up for it. And we will answer questions about this. And if you have specifics, you can give us specifics, and then we can answer your individual questions, because not everybody can afford to come and get paid coaching. And I know that, and that's okay. It's why we offer this option. Every month we do a live public coaching, and then 30 for 30 is every month. We have an opportunity for you to win free coaching by writing, by just opening your manuscript for 30 minutes at a time. And that is, I will also put the link to that in the show notes, because we choose those after either we choose them live on the coaching monthly, or we choose them after the coaching is over and we contact the people, or, you know, put it in the Discord, depending on what, but there are opportunities. So if you are feeling completely like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know what to do. Ask me a question in the comments so that I can try to answer it as I see it. And if I can, I will. If I can't, I may do a podcast about it or a quick cast episode about it. And or point you to one that we've already done in the past. And then also, again, the public coaching, please come to that. But to honor the topic that we initially came here to talk about today, I need us to stop feeling the FOMO that time is running out, that there's some kind of a gold rush that we need to get in on. The gold rush is over. It's fine about that. We're going to talk again about how to manage the organizational growth curve next week, because that is also an important thing. And then I have a couple of other topics on sustainability. And I think this is where we're just going to hang out for a while. I have been seeing more and more need for this, and I'm afraid the need is going to get so big that we're not going to be prepared for it. So, and I'm going to leave you with this very last thought. Because Loki is in charge of the market, and that unsettles some of us, right? Like there's a capricious energy to the market where why someone is successful and someone else isn't doesn't always make sense. And why my books don't sell and why someone else's books do sell doesn't always make sense to me. My hope is that by understanding there's a capriciousness to the market, that will actually relieve some of the pressure you're putting on yourself. That if you're not selling, that somehow you think you failed, when the reality is all you're doing is participating in what basically amounts to gambling, right? And so I can do my absolute best and I can try my hardest and put all the work in, and I can still not reach that goal that I want. But all that means is I can just keep trying, because it doesn't actually mean anything about the predictability of the success behind me. I can change things. I can try again. The future's open. And this is part of why I feel like I need to end in this place of like the positivity futuristic part, right? Where I feel like we've been doing a lot of strategic connectedness significance in terms of like, oh boy, this is heavy and it's big and it's kind of depressing. For a lot of us, for some of us, we might feel lighter. And if you want to yell at me, I can take it. It's fine. I'm happy to be the place that receives all of your anger. If it will help you to get to the other side of this very difficult reckoning and then create the career that you want or the hobby that you want or the experience that you want, without feeling like somehow you're constantly failing because you're doing all these things right and you're not having the outcome that you want to have. I am going to stop here. And I just need to remind everybody that the future's open and your past is not predictive of your future. And we can do things differently. But we have to do things differently. If we're going to get different results, we have to change something. So what are you going to change? I will see you all next week from the studio. And I hope that everyone has a good week. And I will see some of you on the Patreon. And I will see some of you on Facebook and on the Discord and in other places. And please, please, please know we are here for you. If you need us, please reach out, and I will see you next time on the Quitcast. Okay. Bye, everybody.